The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way. And that's with Babbel. Be a better you in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts and help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations, and their tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription at babbel.com/bluewire. That's 60% off at babbel.com/bluewire, spelled BABBEL.com/bluewire. Rules and restrictions apply.
You don't want it, you don't need it, but you're gonna get it anyway. The Kevin Sheehan Show. Here's Kevin.
Powell. Plenty of time. Stop it. Throw it. To the end zone for Robinson and a touchdown. He'll bring four on this third down. Powell under pressure. That ball's out. And it could be a score. And it is. Touchdowns on the Arizona defense. Cam Thomas comes up with the scoop after Gardeck knocked it away from Howell.
Sam Howell's first game as the official starter of this franchise last week. There was some good. There was some not so good. But another chance to do even better comes Sunday in Denver at 4:25 Eastern. A chance for this team to get off to its first 2-0 start in 12 seasons. Yeah, we've talked about that this week. If they win Sunday, and it's a winnable game in Denver, the first time they'll be 2-0 since Rex Grossman led the team to wins over the Giants and the Cardinals at home in 2011. By the way, if they win the game against Denver and they are 2-0, they'll be going for 3-0 for the first time since 2005. They haven't been 3-0 in 18 seasons. 2005, by the way, was the last season in which they won a playoff game. Looking forward to Sunday for sure. Lots on the game against Denver on the show today. The show's presenting sponsor is Window Nation. Call them at 866-90-NATION. Go to windownation.com. If you've been thinking about new windows, I promise you it is worth giving Window Nation the first shot. 866-90-NATION, windownation.com. Mention my name. You'll get a free estimate, and they will take good care of you. On the show today, Jay Gruden. He's going to be with us every Friday. We'll talk last week's win over Arizona. We'll preview the Denver game, and we'll talk some NFL with Jay as well. That's coming up in the next segment. Final segment of the show, the smell test and a few thoughts on Maryland and Virginia tonight in College Park. This segment will include my keys to a win over Denver and a final score prediction on the game. Last week, 20-16 Washington was my prediction. I'm sorry, 20-14 was my prediction. 20-16 was the actual final score. If you haven't rated or reviewed the podcast and you have time, especially on Apple and Spotify, it's super helpful for us. It's 30 seconds of 5 stars if you see fit, and a quick 1-2 sentence review. Follow us as well on Apple and Spotify, and subscribe to the podcast. All of those things help. I actually want to read a review that was written by Clay. He gave us 5 stars. He titled his review, 5 Stars and a Counter Argument. I'm reading this, and it's a longer review. You don't have to write quite this long of a review. Again, 1-2 sentences is fine. But I thought it was interesting, and I think some of you might think so as well. He gave us 5 stars. First of all, he said, Kevin, I've given you 5 stars on my phone and 5 stars on my work phone, a 2-for-1. Thank you, Clay, very much. He writes, an absolute necessity for any D.C. sports fan who has moved out of the area, especially Tuesdays and Thursdays with Tom. Interesting hearing you and Tom weigh in on behalf of young people on how we perceive RG3. I'm 29, and neither me nor my peers see RG3 as the high point in our time as Washington football fans. Instead, we treat him as another disappointing page in a lifetime that has been one long disappointing chapter. The closest thing we have to a legend is Sean Taylor. Santana Moss and London Fletcher are childhood heroes as well. I think those applauding RG3 as a legend are the same yahoos that hopped from the Carson Wentz's The Answer train to the Sam Howell was a fifth-round steal train. In other words, the tambourine shakers that never stop believing. First of all, those tambourine shakers, they may be right about Sam Howell, Clay. Who knows? As for me and my buddies, we will continue to boo RG3. He left us high and dry and wanting more. As for the organization, instead of scrounging for a legend in recent history to appease us young people, they should focus on when times were actually good and hold that as the standard to return to. We're not dumb. We know the team's historic excellence, and we won't settle for less. We demand more than RG3. Thank you, Clay. And, you know, Clay wrote that because we were talking about RG3's return to FedEx Field. We were talking about the video that the team produced with RG3 welcoming everybody back. And how, you know, I said, I thought that that's an interesting choice because I consider RG3 at best to be a very polarizing figure in this franchise's history. There are people that are not fond of RG3, and there are people that are fond of RG3. I mean, I think that's polarizing is actually the kindest way to describe probably the split in the overall fan base. But to your point, Clay, I'm not saying and didn't mean to say that all young people love RG3 and all of the older fans don't. I know that there are fans your age that are not fond of RG3. I think my view is that there are people like you, certainly in your age group, that are not big RG3 fans, probably loved that season, but hate the way, you know, it ended and sort of understand, you know, what RG3 was and sort of the, as Tommy described it, the co-conspirator with Dan Snyder and running Mike Shanahan and a lot of great coaches out of town. But I do think that the part of the fan base that really does still embrace RG3, I do think most of that group is younger rather than older. I'm not saying everybody feels that way, but I would bet that most of that group is younger. But I'm not speaking for all young people because I don't know for sure. But anyway, I appreciated that review and your thoughts because I think actually the more important part is you describing that you don't want you want the organization to not appease the younger part of the fan base by scrounging around for recent legends. And I think that's a really interesting thing because, look, Cooley and I have talked about this many times together. As much as there are players from the Dan Snyder era that I really like personally, Chris being number one on the list, Santana, Clinton, London, you know, Sean Springs, none of them won anything. And they to me, come up way short of the real, you know, winners and legends in this franchise that played long before Dan Snyder got here. And I appreciate that somebody of your age recognizes that. I've told Cooley that many times. I understand how many people have 47 jerseys and 56 jerseys and 26 jerseys. I get it, you know. But at the same time, you know, those players, they didn't win anything. And that's why, you know, the whole Sean Taylor jersey retirement thing rubbed me the wrong way. Not because I didn't think his jersey deserved to be retired at some point, but because it went before the champions, you know, and players that deserved it more on merit. And I didn't think that the organization understood that. They didn't. They messed that up. They didn't just mess up the handling of that weekend. It shouldn't have been Sean that was next after Bobby Mitchell. Period. Thoughtful email or review. Thank you, Clay. Again, the reviews that you write don't have to be that long. They can be more like what B-Squared wrote. B-Squared wrote, Kevin, I've been listening to you talk sports since you were on with John Riggins. I love the show, and it keeps me entertained on my hour drive to work. Tom and Cooley are awesome, but I got to say, I need more Doc. I can't understand why you won't let 88 come on more often. I'm just going by what Doc says. Yeah, don't go by what Doc says, because about 50% of what he says about me, anyway, is true. I love having Doc on the podcast. Whenever he is available to come on, because he's very busy and he's very important, I love having him on. So, yeah, rate us and review us, Apple, Spotify, much appreciated. So there is some news as we are recording the podcast from about an hour ago. Ron Rivera announced that Chase Young is going to play Sunday. This was Ron Rivera announcing that news, and then John Keim, you'll hear, ask a follow-up question, which will lead to Ron talking about how much Chase will play.
Yes, very positive. A lot of good things throughout the week, and there's a lot of confidence. You know, obviously we have to be smart because it is his first introduction to, you know, full contact, full speed contact, other than what he had in practice this week. And he had a very good week. I mean, the young man has worked his tail off, and, you know, I think he's done the things that they've needed to see. So that's the real big positive for us going forward.
So what... Going back to how he looked early in camp, knowing that he's had about a month off, what can you expect from him Sunday?
Well, I mean, we most certainly have to be aware and have a pitch count, obviously. But the biggest thing, more than anything else, is the young man has just been terrific from day one in training camp. Worked his tail off. You know, had the unfortunate where we had to put him down for a little bit, and then now he's back up. He's been working hard. He's done everything he needs to. He's been chomping at the bit. So we're excited for his opportunity.
I'm excited to see Chase Young on Sunday. I really am. I told you guys just over a week ago, I had someone tell me that the injury was more than a stinger, that it was neurological and he was going to have to be cleared by a doctor to play. They were hopeful, but they weren't sure exactly when the doctor would clear him. There was a doctor's appointment, that ultimately ruled him out for Arizona. And now the doctor's cleared him to play. But that same person that gave me that information that I shared with you before the Arizona game also told me that, he reported in shape. He reported with just a different approach. Remember, this coaching staff heading into training camp, especially after he didn't post for any of the offseason stuff, anything he gave them positively was going to be icing on the cake. They had no expectations. They were interested in moving him before the draft. Let's not forget that. They were open to trade offers for Chase Young. But when he got there, he was in shape, and he had a different overall approach. Even Montez Sweat commented on that. If they get Chase Young of 2020 back, wow, this defense could really be. It's already really good. By the way, speaking of good defenses, how about just the NFC East defenses? Dallas's defense. I think the Giants' defense is good. Philly last night, my God. Jalen Carter and Jordan Davis and Fletcher Cox and Josh Sweat and Brandon Graham and Darius Slay. I mean, they had guys out last night. My God, are they big, big up front. I thought it was interesting last night. Trust me, I'm not going to spend much time on Kirk. I mean, for those of you that tweeted me saying, another primetime loss for your boy, you guys are just, true knuckleheads. I mean, the dude threw for 364 and four touchdowns in the game. He was not the problem, and he was not the reason they lost. One of the reasons they lost, and it was interesting to watch Philly last night on offense, because, they got off to a slow start last week against the Patriots. They ran the ball down Minnesota's throat, 259 yards rushing on 48 rushes, and it was all dual threat. It was all zone read, Jalen Hurts, kept it early in the game and then pretty much gave it to DeAndre Swift the rest of the game instead of keeping it on the zone read. DeAndre Swift last night, in for Kenneth Gainwell, who is really their starter. You know, Miles Sanders doesn't play for Philly anymore. 175 yards on 28 carries. 6.3 yards per carry. Boston Scott, five rushes, 40 yards. Their two running backs averaged more than 7 yards per carry. My God. That was a game reminiscent more of the 2021 Eagles. I mean, they had some games like this last year, don't get me wrong. But where, you know, it was true, you know, presenting the quarterback as a run threat and making you play the quarterback in what is 11-on-11 football when you have the quarterback presented as a zone read keeper threat. They're good. How about A.J. Brown and Jalen Hurts getting into it on the sideline? Wow. Philly's 2-0. They didn't look good against the Patriots. They looked better last night, for sure. But they got carved up last night. Even as great as their defense is, they were missing some pieces. And, I mean, you know, Jefferson, 11 catches, 159 yards. Minnesota, you know, put it on them with the pass game. And maybe that will be their Achilles heel. I don't know. We'll see. They're 2-0. In the NFC East, loaded with really good defensive teams. All right. Before I get to my keys, along with a prediction on the final score, Frank Clark is out for Denver on Sunday. He's their best defensive lineman, but it looks like Jerry Jeudy is back. And then for Washington, Curtis Samuel, his hip injury has him, it looks like, questionable for Sunday's game. All right, keys to a win over Denver and a prediction, and then we'll get to Jay Gruden. Number one, this is the same as number one last week. A team like Denver needs help to score a lot of points, just like Arizona did. You can't give them free points, okay? No turnovers. I know it's cliche, but it's really important in games like this when you don't have to be great offensively to have a chance to win unless offensively you're handing them points, which is why they almost lost to Arizona. Denver's similar. They're not as bad. I mean, it's Russell Wilson, a quarterback. It's Sean Payton as an offensive coordinator. And they are getting Jerry Jeudy back. But you can't give them free points. And you can't give them solid field position because you're giving up sacks and you're ending up with third and 25s. And then check down on third and 25 for 7 yards. And now it's fourth and 18. And instead of starting from their own 25, they're starting from their own 43. You can't have a lot of those either. Number two, this is going to sound sort of counter to what I was just talking about, but I want them to stay aggressive offensively. We've talked a lot about this week, the game plan last week, throwing it a lot, being aggressive, erring on the side of being aggressive, you know, being at 2.5 to 3 to 1 pass over run to start the game last week into the third quarter before they, you know, really tried to run the ball. I'm not going to give you, as a key to beating Denver, being more balanced and running the football to protect Sam. I know that a good running game protects a young quarterback and is a young quarterback's best friend along with a good defense. But I've already seen what Eric Bieniemy wants to do and wants to be. And I'd like to see that through. I don't want to risk a game if it's not working, so you got to change on the fly. But I want to see them come out aggressive. I want to see them throw the football. Like we've talked about this week, they understand, I think Eric Bieniemy does, you know, a game-managing quarterback, if that's what he is, then we'll get to that at some point, but they think he's more. And to win big in the NFL, you've got to be able to throw the football. And he wants him to learn this offense and develop as a starting quarterback in the NFL as a guy that's throwing the football, not as a guy that's managing the game. So that's number two. I want to see them stay aggressive. And maybe that shouldn't be a key to beating Denver, but it's a key for me to the development of Sam Howell and the way that I think they want to see him develop. I would certainly expect that if it goes the wrong way, like it did at times against Arizona, that they will, you know, adjust. But I'd like to see the same aggressive approach be in place Sunday. Number three, Washington beats Denver if they keep Russell Wilson as much as they can in the pocket. If they can, on the bootlegs, which you're going to see some with Russell Wilson, getting him outside the pocket on, you know, a play action to a running back and then what they call quarterback keepers or bootlegs, as we know them, coming the other way. You got to hem that in, too. You got to force him to get rid of it quickly to the shallow, to the guy running the shortest route, and then come up and tackle. But really keeping Russell Wilson in the pocket is huge for any team playing Russell Wilson over the years. He's not as good from the pocket. Sean Payton can carve up defenses with great scheme. He schemes people open. Russell Wilson has always had a difficult time from the pocket seeing all of that. Keep him in the pocket. Play, you know, those, you know, be disciplined in your rush. You know, we understand that, I think, as football fans, when you just, you know, go hell-bent after a quarterback and you create lanes for a guy like Russell Wilson to run up into or to run or to allow him to get outside the pocket, that's when it's trouble. So keep Russell Wilson in the pocket and make him beat you from the pocket. Number four, Washington beats Denver if they stop the run. You know, I went back, and I didn't mention this at all this week. You know, James Conner had a couple of creases in that game Sunday. He was 14 for 62. That was 4.4 yards per carry. And Denver's strength, maybe offensively, is Javonte Williams and Samaje Perine, because they actually ran the ball effectively against the Raiders last week. Javonte Williams, who is a college teammate of Sam Howell's, 13 carries, 52 yards, exactly 4.0 yards per carry. And Perine was 8 for 41, 5.1 yards per carry. As much as the defense dominated the game last week, Connor had a few runs, had a few creases. Stop the run. That's crucial. And then lastly, you know, whatever you do, you know, this is going to be, I think, a low-scoring game. I think there are going to be some field goals in this game. Don't lose the game on a bad snap. If they lose the game on a bad snap by Cameron Cheeseman, Ron is deservedly going to take heavy criticism by yours truly for starters. He said he's concerned about this, but he's not going to do anything until something bad happens. Now, it's possible they've been having guys, you know, work out, long snappers, you know, out in Ashburn. I haven't seen that reported, and maybe they can't find somebody to do it that's better. Or maybe he's going to go back to his old technique. All right, my final score prediction. I've got Denver 20, Washington 16. Same score as the Arizona game, but a different winner. I think it's a very winnable game. I think the game's going to go under 39. I kind of like the under in this game. But I think this is a game that comes down to, you know, the team that makes the fewest mistakes. Now, Washington actually made more mistakes. I mean, they lost the turnover battle and won the game. Denver actually won the turnover battle against the Raiders and lost the game. But this is going to come down to one of those games that I think is lower scoring, you know, field position, turnovers, you know, made kicks versus missed kicks. That's why Denver lost last week. They missed an extra point, missed a field goal. So I think it can go, you know, either way. But this is a pressure game for Denver. You know, Denver is 0-1 at home to start the Sean Payton era. 0-2 would be a disaster, because next week they go to Miami. So there's a lot of pressure on them to not lose two home games to start the season. I think the pressure last week was on Washington at home with the crowd and the environment and the expectations that they were going to beat up on Arizona. This week, maybe Washington can play, you know, a more relaxed game. I'm expecting that Washington will play well on defense. that, you know, Sam will improve and maybe be a little bit more consistent offensively, but that this is going to be a knockdown dragout Sunday in Denver. 20-16 Denver is the prediction, but I could certainly see it going either way. But that is the official prediction. Stay tuned to find out whether or not Denver is in the smell test. Want to tell you right now that Window Nation's deal that they've got going is as good as you're going to get at any time of the year. No money down, no payments, no interest for 2 years. Plus, you can get up to 50% off all style windows. Bow, bay, double hung, any style. You'll save thousands on your new windows and your energy bills, all the while upgrading the look and feel of your home. Yeah, if you choose Window Nation and you call them at 866-90-NATION, go to windownation.com, mention my name, get a free estimate, and you like the estimate and you move forward with them, you're going to work with a great company with a great product. And this deal is probably unmatched anywhere else right now. You're going to save big on your energy bills. You're going to make your home look better, increasing the value of your home. Choose Window Nation if you've been thinking about windows. I've been endorsing Window Nation for 14 years. I promise you it will work out. 866-90-NATION or windownation.com. No money down, no payments, no interest for 2 years. 50% off all styles of windows. Save thousands by calling Window Nation. Again, 866-90-NATION or windownation.com. Jay Gruden, right after these words from a few of our sponsors.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Jay Gruden coming up here in a moment. Before we get to Jay, the fall weather is here. It was 54 degrees earlier this morning. It really felt like fall. I think the summer weather is over. And if you're looking to watch football at an outdoor destination with drinks and live music and friends, I've got this spot for you. The Bullpen. Yeah, that Bullpen. The one next to Nats Park in the heart of Navy Yard. It's the go-to spot for all of us for baseball games. But this season, they're bringing you all the NFL and college football action that you can handle. Admission, of course, is absolutely free. Get your friends together, wear your team colors, and head on over to the Bullpen to watch football in an outdoor setting that's fun. They've got the games, the drinks, the energy to make every moment unforgettable. Visit them today at thebullpendc.com to see the game schedule. We had our Burgundy and Sold party down there back in late July. It's always been one of the best spots in town. And now it is a great spot on fall weekends to watch football. Again, thebullpendc.com to see the game schedule. Mention my name if you're down there and tell them that you found out about football weekends at the Bullpen because of this podcast. All right, Jay Gruden is with us right now. He's going to be with us every Friday during football season. We'll take a look back at the Washington game from the previous week, look forward to Sunday's game, and we'll talk some NFL as well. So let's start, Jay, with just last Sunday, the close call win over Arizona. What did you think?
Well, I think some people would be disappointed that they didn't beat up on the Cardinals more than they did, but I was impressed with it. You have to get a win. I think playing with a quarterback that's only played one game in his career, they might be a little bit more conservative. But Bienemy came out and tried to air it out and give him some opportunities to make some plays. But at the end of the day, the defense held their ground, made the plays, and Howell made a play after having two turnovers. I like the way he was resilient, made a play to get the win. So there's a lot of improvement they will do, and they'll continue to improve throughout the year. I mean, they're not going to be a finished product by any stretch the week, first half of the season. They're going to have to continue to improve and gel and play together with that line and with the new quarterback and playing together for the first time. It'll be tough, but if they can just not turn the ball over, play good defense, they'll be in a lot of football games early.
You know, I talked about season openers as a fan and also as someone who's wagered on one or hundreds of games over a long period of time. Week one to me is fun, but it's hardly an indication of what a team will be. In fact, in thinking about your teams here, your first season, you barely scored in your first game at Houston, and then the next 2 weeks, I think you guys put up 75 points. I know there was a quarterback change, but week one just is rarely an indicator of what a team will be. Do you agree with that, A, and B, why do you think that is?
Well, I think week one, you're getting a feel for the people that you have. Now, a lot of the teams that have veteran quarterbacks and veteran players on their team, they can come out smoking a little bit easier, kind of like Miami. They got, Tua is kind of new, but veteran players on offense, they come out smoking a little bit easier than teams that have a lot of rookie quarterbacks playing, a lot of first-year quarterbacks getting significant time. Jordan Love, the four rookies that are starting. Sam Howell, those guys, these guys aren't going to come out on firing all cylinders. I mean, even some of the veteran guys like Joe Burrow struggled, but it's about coming out of training camp. Preseason is different now than it used to be. And you're just kind of getting a feel for the regular season. I mean, however, I will say this, just because it's week one, everybody's up in arms or down in the dumps, whatever it might be. You can take any week out of the year last year and pull it out and holy cow, look what happened here. So it's a 17-game grind, and it's hard to get a gauge for what a team's going to be week one or week three or whatever. It's a 17-week season that you have to put together a team and figure out who you are and what you're going to be.
Yeah, there's no league like the NFL. It's so week to week. Things change so dramatically unless you're one of those elite teams which are always driven by an elite quarterback, or maybe, every year there's one or two teams that are truly horrible, but even those teams, will rise up in surprise at some point. So back to Washington. What would be the coaching points for Sam Howell after his first game?
Well, obviously, the two turnovers, the fumble is the biggest one. You have to have two hands in the pocket all the time and never make a bad play worse. Be ready to throw it away or take a sack if you have to take a sack. But you can't be Superman on every play. And some young quarterbacks, some strong quarterbacks, athletic quarterbacks think they can escape pressure all the time because, they're competitive and think you're great elite athletes. When you should take a sack or you should just throw it away. That's the most important thing moving forward, especially with the defense that they have. You can't give another team 6 points. Jack Del Rio might beat your ass coming off to the sideline,
Yeah.
So that's the biggest thing. Protect the ball. And then, just continue to improve. I mean, we're going to continue. Him and Bienemy are going to continue to gel, figure out what plays they like, what plays are fits for them, how they're going to attack defense moving forward. Because each week it's going to be different. And it'll be a process. It won't be pretty early. But I think Hal has proven over two games that he has the tools to be a pretty good quarterback so far. So it's a work in progress, but it's going to be fun to watch, actually.
How much do you get on a quarterback for the plays he misses? I'm thinking about early in the game, and I'm sure that you saw this, but he finds Jahan over the middle for 12 yards, Dotson, but he misses on a huge opportunity to Diami Brown running down the far sideline, wide open. And he appeared to look at him, but decided to come back to Jahan Dotson. How much do you get on a quarterback when he makes a positive play but misses on the big opportunity that you've schemed up?
Never get on a quarterback for a completion, especially a first down 12 yards. Now, you'll show him on the film the big alerts. Every play, or most plays, will have an alert tagged on it. You have a big post over the top for quarters or a go route for man-to-man with Terry McLaurin, a single high defense. You might run a shallow cross or something like that and then have Terry on a go ball. And if it's single high, you alert Terry most plays, drop back plays, have a big alert on them. And you just, hey, big plays are hard to come by in the NFL. If you get the looks that we want, let it rip. But I won't fault you for a completion, but don't forget about this. Don't forget about that guy in this coverage. So he's got to see all the routes and see all the concepts. And like I said, it's a process, and it's a grind for these quarterbacks. Some quarterbacks didn't get it till year 4 or 5. I mean, Daniel Jones didn't. I mean, they got shut out. But
right.
You see how much better he got after 4 or 5 years. It just takes some time for them to see all the route concepts versus all the coverages.
Do you know the play I'm talking about?
Yes.
So
yes.
Why do you?
I don't know why he didn't. I don't know why he didn't let that rip. That was confusing to me as well.
Yeah. Because I do remember you telling me that Kansas City Monday night game, when you guys had a chance to take the lead late, and Doxson kind of dropped it in the back of the end zone, and you said the play was schemed up for Jordan Reed, and he was wide open for 6. And so,
yeah, it was a double move, and there was no safety, and Jordan toasted that poor safety trying to cover him. I think it was Mitchell.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he threw a good ball to Doxson. We just didn't come down with it.
All right. What were your thoughts on the overall, you know, offensive scheme, the game plan, the play calling? I mean, he came out aggressively letting Sam throw it a lot. I mean, they were 3-1 pass to run in that first half and into the third quarter.
Yeah, I think that, you know, being that they're playing Arizona Cardinals, I think they probably thought they could block them up and take some shots early, get the crowd involved, and probably a little bit more overzealous than anything. But I like the aggressive nature, trying to show people that your young quarterback is ready to go. And then I think when they lost the lead, he tapered it back a little bit, got Brian Robinson involved, and I think that's what you're going to see their bread and butter is probably. But, I mean, you have to let your quarterback play. And in order for them to win the division, go to the playoffs, he's going to have to make some throws and make some big-time throws and drop-back situations, and let's see what he's got. And I like the fact that they trusted him to take those shots early. And then I like the fact that they adjusted and did what they had to do to win the game. That's the most important thing.
What else offensively, good or bad, stood out to you? I mean, there's been a lot of discussion about the offensive line play this week and, you know, who was responsible for the sacks, et cetera. But just overall offensively, you know, something that you really liked or something that you were concerned about?
I think moving forward, the movement on the offensive line, you know, Brian Robinson, I got to see some more holes or something and speed or something. There's something missing there in a running game, gain of 2, gain of 3, gain of 4. I mean, it was effective on the last drive where Sam scrambled for a first down or for a touchdown, but there's not a lot of power, not a lot of movement I worry about, and the pass protection is soft at times. So, I mean, we all know that they juggled the offensive line around, so it's going to take some time, but they got to be more firm so Sam can set his feet and see. Maybe he couldn't see the deep ball because people are bearing down on him. So got to give him a clean pocket, and we got to get some movement in the running game somehow, some way.
On the other side of the ball, you know, the three best players are certainly three of their best players, John Allen, Daron Payne, and Montez Sweat. You are very familiar with all three of them. They were drafted when you were here. How do you, as a coach, after a dominant defensive performance like that one, kind of balance that, the great performance, with the fact that the Cardinals are pretty bad offensively and the quarterback in that game is probably at best a backup quarterback in the league?
Yeah, I think you have standards for your defense, and you're going to make the opposing offense, whoever it is, whether it's, you know, Josh Allen or whoever the quarterback is, our standards are high. We're going to make this offense earn every blade of grass that they get. No free plays, no late hits, play to the whistle, hustle and hit. And that's where your MO's got to be. And that's the way they played. They all ran around and had physical tackles, and they rushed the passer. They stopped the run. And now the standard's set. That's the expectations they have to meet every week. And it's going to get harder and harder. Russell Wilson, Sean Payton, it's going to get harder this week and next week after that. I mean, eventually you're going to play the Eagles and the Cowboys. But when you set your standards and you hold everybody to those standards and you have great players holding these players accountable, like Payne and Allen, they're going to make sure that Jamin Davis is in the right spot and Kendall Fuller's tackling and all these other things. So they have good leadership, they have good coaching, and they have good players.
You just said good coaching. You've already mentioned Jack Del Rio. You coached against him when he was a head coach and I think also when he was a coordinator. Do you like Jack Del Rio?
Yeah, I mean, he does a good job. He's sound in what he does. I mean, he's not overly complicated. You're not going to see a lot of nuances in the blitz game or anything like that. He's more of a conventional let's get after their ass type guy and play our style of defense, and we're not going to try to trick you into anything, which is good. Sometimes you like to have a little exotic blitz from time to time, which he doesn't do a whole lot of, but he's sound in what he does, and he's a motivator, and that's what you need to do.
One more thing just about last week, but it also ties into moving forward. It appears right now they've got a long snapper issue. Their long snapper, Cameron Cheeseman, dribbled a couple of back during the preseason, and he bounced one back on Sunday. And Ron seems to be okay with kind of letting it play out. He said the other day, he goes, I'm concerned about it, but we won't do anything about it until, you know, it turns into a disaster on the field because they've made every kick because Tress Way's done a great job of holding. Are they hard to find? How would you be handling that right now?
I would like to think they had some workouts. I mean, they have to be working out long snappers, and they got to be on the phone and making sure that one more mishap, and it's we got to get a new long snapper. I mean, I'm sorry. We talked about this on another show somewhere. I mean, you just can't have a long snapper has one job. There's nobody over his face. Snap the ball. I know it's a skill, but if you have that skill, you should be 100% all the time doing it. I mean, there's no excuse. It's like, I don't know. It's very simple to do if you have that skill, because used to be you could line up a guy over your face and you'd get destroyed. But now there's nobody can line up on top of you. Just snap the ball and jog down the field and try to get in the way of the punt returner. So I think one more mishap and they'll be looking for a new long snapper.
All right, let's talk about Denver. How do you know when you're matched up? I mean, I think you did pretty well against Sean Payton when he was in New Orleans. You guys crushed him here in 2015, and then we had that.
They crushed us 1 year.
They crushed you 1 year on that Monday night game, yeah. And then
that was Drew Brees needed like 150 yards for the record.
Right. That was,
he's not going to get it on our watch. He got the first two drives.
Yeah. Well, you know, that 2018 team, and I've told you this before. I think the end of that 2018 season, the game at Tennessee in particular, was one of the best coaching jobs in a game that you did while you were here. I don't know how you coached that team up at the end of the year. You guys beat Jacksonville, and you had a chance with Josh Johnson at quarterback to beat Tennessee. But that was the year that Alex got hurt. And I, in watching it, like you guys did some really good things. You weren't turning the ball over. You weren't beating yourself. Alex was managing the games, but it wasn't dynamic offensively, and every good offense you faced, New Orleans, Atlanta, they ran it up on you guys. So I thought it was a little bit of fool's gold when you guys were 5-2, to be completely honest with you. Now, we'll never know, because you lost Alex and then you lost Colt the next week. But what was your thought as you guys were building that 5-2 record? Was there any part of it that you said, yeah, but?
No, I thought we had a good chance to win the division. We had a game and a half or 2-game lead. We were 6-3 going in and playing against Houston before he got hurt. And we were playing good football. And you're right, we weren't turning the ball over. We had a decent running game, and we were playing pretty good defense. And that's the recipe a lot of these teams have to have. If you don't have an elite quarterback, 85% of the teams have to play this style of football, especially early in the season. You just can't light up teams and score 50 points a game. You're going to have to punt. You're going to have to play field position game. If you don't turn the ball over and your defense plays well, you're going to be in every game. And whoever can make a play in a critical situation will win that game. So that was our recipe, and Alex is a great manager. And sometimes he'd frustrate you because he wouldn't take a shot here and there, but I loved having Alex because he could manage. He could run. He could run for first downs when the play wasn't there, and he was not going to screw the game up and give guys opportunities to make plays. And once you get to know your quarterback and how he is, you set the game plan up for him, and he was a great leader for us. It's just unfortunate the way it happened.
It is. The strangest game that year, though, and it's one of the strangest games statistically in NFL history, because it's the only time a team has had 500 yards in a game and only scored 3 points. And that was the game that you guys won at Tampa 16-3. They had like 3 turnovers and missed, I think, 3 field goals in the game or something like that.
Bend, but don't break.
You were bending to the tune of 500 yards.
Yep, that was a tough one. That was a heck of a win, though. That was a good win. I mean, sometimes teams are going to move the ball between the 20s. You make them kick field goals. You force the ball out, and and do the best you can. But that was a weird game, you're right.
Yeah, it was a strange game. All right, back to Sean Payton. So you did, though. I mean, you guys scored, I think, nearly 50 against him at home in 2015. And then there was that real unfortunate ending to the 2017 game where you guys were up two scores. I know. We don't have to go through the blow-by-blow with that one. But tell me about coaching against Sean Payton.
Well, I mean, you know, he's going to be aggressive. He's an aggressive coach. You know, defensively, you know, Jack Del Rio has to understand if he's in single high, he has some patented single high beaters. If he's in two high, he's got some patented two high beaters. He's going to attack the weak side hook area. I mean, so Sean knows how to attack defenses, that's for sure. And he's going to get after you. He's going to get after you with tempo. He's going to get after you with personnel groupings and formations and motions. So he's going to make Russell Wilson make these throws. And Russell's going to get better and better, hopefully, for Sean Payton handling these concepts that he likes and that he knows, like Drew Brees did. I mean, he's no Drew Brees, but hopefully he can do that for their sake. But they have some decent weapons. I don't think they have quite the speed to take the top off that they probably need. But with Jerry Jeudy back, he can do all the stuff that Michael Thomas did in the slot. And, you know, they have a decent tight. You know, they have Adam Trautman, who he had at New Orleans, so they could do some things with him. But I think it's still a work in progress. Russell's going to need some time to get to know Sean, what he likes, why he likes things that he does like. Drew played a lot of football, and he knew exactly where to go versus what coverage with what route concept. Russell's still working that progression in his mind, and it's going to take some time.
What do you think, and what have you thought, of Russell Wilson as a quarterback?
You know, I think coming out in his first couple of years, he's outstanding. He was like a greased pig. You couldn't tackle him. He was, you know, the off-script plays, he was incredible. I mean, it just drove you crazy. And some of his true drop-back stuff, he was pretty good. But I think he's tapered off quite a bit. I don't think he can see down the field a lot. He has trouble getting to his second and third progressions, and he's not quite as mobile as he used to be. Looks like to me. He doesn't make those splash plays outside the pocket that he used to. So I think that's the difference. If you have a mobile quarterback and he's not as mobile anymore, where his strength, where they're off schedule plays and he's not making those plays, well, he's not a pocket pass, true pocket passer that you want in this type of offense. So it's a weird combination. Sean Payton is a drop back passing type quarterback, and Russell Wilson's more of an off script type player. So they'll find a common ground and figure it out, I'm sure, because Sean's a great coach, but something's got to give.
Do you see any similarities at all between Sam Howell and Russell Wilson? I'm not talking about Sam Howell's going to be vintage Russell Wilson, but in that it seems like some of Sam's best plays and most productive plays come off schedule outside the pocket.
Yeah, which is an awesome trait to have this day and age in pro football. You have to have it because the true drop-back quarterbacks, there aren't many of them anymore. So teams are going to these Anthony Richardsons and these athletic quarterbacks because – coaches know that, hey, we got to do something off schedule because we're not going to be able to call the perfect play against these defenses all the time. So we need a quarterback that can run and make some things happen, some quarterback design runs, some zone reads, some RPOs, and that's what they're going to have to do with Sam Howell. But, yeah, you're right. That's the type of quarterback people are looking for now, and that's what Sam Howell's got to give them. And he just has to understand when he does these off schedule plays, he can't spin out of a defensive end and fumble it in the end zone and take negative plays. He's just got to take what the defense gives him still and manage the game. But be aggressive. It's a fine line. It's hard to coach off schedule. You can't. You have to trust your quarterback.
I've heard you say this before. It really helps on a condensed field. In the red zone, the ability to extend because you don't have a full field and you don't have the time to get people open or the space, that's where – and by the way, that's where Sam excelled last week. You know, was in the red zone, off schedule. The touchdown pass to Brian Robinson Jr. and the touchdown run. When you face a team that has an outstanding cover corner like Pat Surtain in Denver, is the game plan? Just explain how the game plan works and what you're thinking about during the course of the week as an offensive guy when they have a true, you know, cover corner that's difficult to go at?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on the matchup. I think Terry can have some success against them possibly. But, yeah, I mean, you work the other side of the field or you work the other matchup. If it's a true man-to-man concept, I mean, the other receivers should be able to hopefully beat Damari Mathis, the other corner, you know, or you work your safety or you work your back against the linebacker. So, yeah, and when they play zone, you're going to try a high-low a hook play or a high-low a corner in cover two or what have you. But, yeah, you want to stay away from a guy like that. I mean, it's sorry. I mean, he's just a great player. Why would we give him an opportunity to change the momentum of the game by throwing an interception? So you have concepts away from him you can run. You can line up three receivers away from him, make him play the single guy, work a three-receiver concept, or work the slot. So, yeah, there's a lot of ways to leave him alone and let the other guys cover your other good players.
Who are the players that you coached against defensively that kept you up at night the most, more than any other?
It was more pass rushers than corners. Obviously, Darrell Revis was sick, but more pass rushers. There's so many good pass rushers that how the hell we're not going to get a pass off. You know, J.J. Watt, when I was at Cincinnati, he moved around all over the place. It was a nightmare trying to find him. Slide the line to J.J. Where's he at? No, he's a defensive end now. God dang it. He's at the right defensive end. He's over attack. He's trying to chip him, but then he had the motion. Wherever J.J. Watt is, motion and chip him. He was by far the best player I had to go against because he was everywhere.
All right, let's talk some NFL. What do you think the Jets should do? Should they ride it out with Zach Wilson, or should they be looking for somebody to come in that can quarterback a team that's pretty damn good roster-wise?
I just think they got to stick with Zach. I mean, he was a top draft pick, and I know they fell out of love with him a little bit and went out and got Aaron Rodgers and benched him for Mike White last year. But I don't know who they're going to get. That's the issue. I mean, most guys are backups for a reason. These older quarterbacks are out of the league because they don't want to play anymore or they've had opportunities and haven't done very well, unless you go to like a Matt Ryan in the booth or somebody like that. Carson Wentz would probably be a good choice because he's played a lot of football. He'd be a good backup if he struggled. But other than that, I don't know. And not many teams are going to trade a backup quarterback because you see how valuable they are. I mean, why would you trade Jacoby Brissett? If Sam Howell runs his own read and messes up his shoulder week two or three, you got to have a guy in here that can perform. I know it. I've lived it.
Right.
It's no fun. You got to have two and sometimes three quarterbacks on your roster.
If I told you both Rivers and Matt Ryan, Philip Rivers and Matt Ryan, were both in shape and willing, which of the two would you pick if you were the Jets?
Oh, my God. Well, they're very similar. They're very productive and good quarterbacks in their career. I'd probably take the one, and neither one of them can run. So I'd probably take, I don't know. That's a coin flip, really. I'd take either one.
What about Tannehill? What if Tannehill were available from Tennessee if their season doesn't go well? And by the way, this is a hypothetical based on Zach Wilson over the next few weeks not being able to get it done with a really good team.
Assuming the Titans go to their rookie.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, he'd be a good one. I mean, he's mobile. At least he can run a little bit. And he threw three picks last week, and he struggled. His career has been really a roller coaster, ups and downs. But he'd be a guy that I would think they would go after if possible, yeah.
What about Kirk with the Jets?
Kirk, I think, is doing fine. I mean, he just threw for 500 yards and four touchdowns, I think. Why are they going to get rid of him? Is he a free agent?
Well, he is a free agent at the end of this year. Yeah, I mean.
Sure. I mean, Kirk has proven that he can play this game effectively at a high level.
Of course.
And he's durable. He's played a lot of football, thrown for a ton of yards. I mean, if you watch Minnesota, he gets hit in the mouth early and often, and he stands in there and makes throw after throw after throw. The people that don't like Kirk, I just don't understand it. I think he's one of the top 5 or 10 quarterbacks in the league for sure.
Of course, you know, last night's a perfect example. You will have a lot of people that will actually think Kirk Cousins was the reason they lost to the Eagles.
Yeah, it's insane.
Insane. All right, let's talk about some of the games this weekend. First of all, we talked about week one. I thought the Giants, and I picked the Giants to be a better team this year than they were last year. I just liked what I saw with Dable. I loved what I saw with Daniel Jones. And they got the shit kicked out of them on Sunday at home against the Cowboys. Are you a believer in them at all? They go to the Cardinals. I actually am a little bit concerned about this game for them because they took such a battering. But what do you make of the Giants and their ability to bounce back here? By the way, they then go to the 49ers on Thursday night. So if they don't get this one, they're staring an 0-3 start in the face.
Yeah, I think they bounced back. They're down 14-0 right off the bat, and they got out of what they do best. And what they do best is the quarterback design runs and work Saquon Barkley and the tight ends. You know, so once you get out of that and you turn into a drop back passing game, you're throwing to Hodgkins and Slayton and Paris Campbell, you're going to struggle because the offensive line is not that good, and they can't hold up against a pass rush like Dallas. So your hands are tied behind your back. You have to try to make an effort to come back by throwing the ball, but you're not built that way. You're built to be successful on first down with Saquon, do some bootlegs, do some quarterback design runs, and that's how they were successful last year. Do some jet sweeps, all that fun stuff to get on the perimeter. And they weren't able to do that because they were down so fast and so early, and they had to do something that they're not built to do. So I think 0-0 against the Cardinals, you'll see the true Giants come out and try to run the ball with Saquon, quarterback design runs, jet sweeps of Paris Campbell, screens, what have you, work the tight end if Waller plays or Bellinger. He was a good player last year, and that's how they play.
What do you think of Josh Allen right now in Buffalo?
Well, one game, you know, he played against the Jets twice last year, and he did the same thing. They won once, and the game they lost, I think he threw three interceptions and got sacked six times. The Jets are a good defense, but Josh has got to just be a little bit more careful with some of these shot plays. The third interception was a great play by the safety.
Right.
That wasn't on Josh necessarily. That was a great break, and not many safeties will break, undercut a deep out route in cover two. That doesn't happen very often. So that was just a great play. But the other two picks, deep shots where he just threw pop flies down the field, the DBs just fair caught it. Those, you can't throw those. You have to be more careful with the football. You want to be aggressive. You can't force the ball to Diggs, no matter how much he is pouting on the sidelines or whatever. You got to go through your progressions, get the ball to Gabe Davis, get the ball to your tight end, your new tight end from Utah, and make the correct throws. And when you break the contain of the pocket, protect the dang ball. And he will do that. He's a great player. But Josh has had games throughout the course of a 17-game season where you have some head-scratching plays. But over the course of those 17 games, he's going to make way more plays than he's not going to make, and he's still one of the top quarterbacks in the league. Just was a tough game for him, and he'll learn from it, and he'll bounce back in a big way.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think a lot of the Josh Allen bashing this week is nuts. I mean, there are probably 27 teams that would 28 teams that would take him as their starting quarterback today. But he plays very recklessly, and I mean, that game on Monday night did not need offensively for Buffalo to do much at all to win the game. The turnovers crushed them.
Yeah, part of that's on the play calling. I mean, if you know that you don't have to score, why are we taking these deep, deep shots against a secondary that's pretty damn good? I mean, they got two of the best cornerbacks in football,
right,
and Sauce and Reed, and safeties are pretty dang good too. They proved to be pretty good. So it's okay to run the ball and throw some quick game and some screens and punt and make Zach Wilson take the ball 85 yards because he's probably going to be the one to give it to you at the end of the day. So there's a time and a place for taking shots. I just don't think against that defense was the proper time or place to do that, to give them an opportunity to get in the game and stay in the game and win the game.
They play the Raiders this week. The Raiders beat Denver. By the way, I didn't mention this to you, but I've mentioned it all week. The Raiders-Broncos game is one of the strangest games of all time. Each team had the ball just six times. There were just six possessions offensively for each team in the game. They just drove it for long periods of time. The ball didn't hit the ground that much. The clock kept rolling. And they, you know, that's why it was a low-scoring game. It's just the clock just kept getting chewed up. But Jimmy Garoppolo now, as a starting quarterback in his career, is 41-17. All of the credit in San Francisco went to everybody but him, and he seems destined to be one of those quarterbacks that all of the credit will always go somewhere else other than him. And yet, you know, he seems to have played big in some big spots during his career, and every team he's on seems to win. What do you think of Jimmy Garoppolo?
Yeah, I think you're right. He does put your team in a spot to win. I compare him kind of like Alex Smith, maybe. He's a game manager. He's accurate. He seems to be a good leader. He doesn't cost your team games, typically. But you'd like to have him. But you're always looking to get better. You know what I mean? I mean, that's why the Chiefs went out and got Patrick Mahomes. They know Alex's limitations, probably, and he's getting older. And they had a chance to get a superstar, a young player. And if the Raiders have a chance to draft somebody in the first round that they think is going to emerge as a superstar quarterback, they'll probably draft him and get rid of Jimmy. But if Jimmy's on your team, he gives you a good chance to win. And he's going to put them in position. And you surround him with a guy like Devontae Adams and Jacoby Myers, who's a great route runner, and Hunter Renfrow, and Austin Hooper, who's a decent tight end, and Josh Jacobs, a good back. You're going to have a chance to win because he's not going to hurt you. He can only help you. He's accurate and get the ball out.
All right. A couple of these games real quickly. Did the Bengals bounce back at home against the Ravens after one of the worst offensive performances you'll ever see by a team?
Yeah, I think that's the most disappointing game of all. I mean, you can't have the receivers that they have and one of the best quarterbacks in the league and throw for 80 yards. That is unheard of. Do you give credit to the Browns defense who's calling plays over there? I don't understand it. But, yeah, they do bounce back because I think the Ravens offensive line's all beat up and Cincinnati will get after Lamar a little bit. And I think Joe and those guys have a lot of pride at Cincinnati. I know Mike Brown and Zach, the coach over there, and they'll get them bounced back. Joe's not going to stand for 80-yard performance again. He's going to let it rip and get Jamar the ball and Tyler Boyd and Higgins, and I think they bounce back in a big way.
What did you make of the Chargers last week? They can move the football, but they couldn't stop the Dolphins. Some of the issues they've had in recent years. They play the Titans on the road, early start, West Coast to East Coast.
Yeah, it'll be a tough one for them. They're going to have to play better defense. I know the Miami Dolphins have weapons out the kazoo, and Tua played his tail off. They didn't really rush a passer. Khalil Mack's got to play. He's got to make his presence felt. And Joey Bosa's got to play. So they got to make their presence felt. They got to get after Tannehill. But the most important thing, they got to stop somehow Derrick Henry, which I know they're going to see a heavy, heavy dose of. And I expect the Titans to bounce back too. And Mike Vrabel's a good coach. And I think they're going to pound the Chargers and early and often. And I think it'll be a long day for the Chargers. But you never know. I mean, Herbert's a great quarterback. And they have some weapons on the outside. And they ran the ball for about 200 yards last week too, so it'll be a good game. But I think the Titans get the win.
The Chiefs, after the Thursday night opening loss to the Lions, go to Jacksonville to play. What are the chances the Chiefs start the season 0-2?
Good chance. I think that's a game of the week for sure. I mean, two great teams going at it. They played tight last year when they played, and they're going to play tight again. Jacksonville added Calvin Ridley, who I think is one of the top receivers in the league, to go along with the already pretty good receiving core, Zay Jones and Christian Kirk. So they have speed at running back. Their quarterback is playing very confident football. They're well coached. The defense is playing pretty darn good. That second year player is rushing the quarterback. They got Josh Allen rushing. They got Trayvon Walker. Yeah. They got pretty good. They're pretty damn good. These Jaguars are. And it's going to be home, and it's first home game for Jacksonville, and that place will be loud. Those fans, because I live down there, and the Jacksonville fans are in love with that team, and it's going to be rocking.
Were you impressed with the Patriots last week, even though they lost to Philadelphia?
I was. I'm always impressed with their defense. One of the toughest defenses to go against, in my opinion. Obviously, Bill Belichick, Ron, and his son do a great job coaching that team. They do a lot of movement up front. They get in your face, play a lot of tight man-to-man, and they mix it up with some zones, and they take away your best option. And it's a very difficult place to play. It's a very difficult defense to go against. So I'm not surprised that they played good defense. Mac Jones didn't play bad. He threw for 300 yards, I believe, but turned the ball over, and they couldn't quite get it done. They're going to be a competitive team in every game they play because they play great defense, and they take the ball away. I think they got Philadelphia like five straight three and outs. I mean, that's hard to do against the Eagles.
Yeah, I think they've got a shot Sunday night at home against Miami.
I agree. They always have a chance at home. I don't care what's going on. They're going to be competitive, and they're going to have a shot.
All right, so how good is Dallas? I mean, I know it's week one. We just talked about that earlier, but how good do you think they can be?
Well, they're not going to jump out to these leads like they did against the Giants and block a field goal, get a pick six or fumble return for touchdown and be up 20-0 by the time you get out of your tie your shoes. You know what I mean? So they're going to play some close games, and Dak, all eyes are on Dak. You know, when they play from behind, which they will eventually, can he make the throws necessary to win? And I believe they have a great defense, and they have good enough skill players. And I think Dak is still damn good quarterback. So I think they're one of the top teams in the NFC for sure. I think they're Super Bowl contenders. They're obviously going to compete with Philadelphia for that division crown in Washington. But they are talented. Yeah.
Do you have a best bet of the weekend?
Yeah, I think the Giants bounce back and take Arizona. I really think Daboll, I mean, football players and coaches have a lot of pride. When you get beat 40-0, you don't have to really say a whole lot in a meeting. Hopefully you have leadership that is strong enough in your locker room. We ain't going to take this shit anymore. We're going to come out guns a-blazing and play much better football. And I just think Arizona's nowhere near they should be for an NFL roster.
All right, so the Giants laying the 4 in Glendale against the Cardinals is your bet of the week.
Yes.
Why did you hesitate? Is there another game that you like?
I was thinking about other games. That was the first one off the top of my head.
All right. What happens in Denver for Washington?
Well, I think both teams, you said it, the way Denver played last week was pretty conservative. Russell chose to take a lot of the checkdowns and throw to the backs and the tight ends, and they didn't have a lot of big plays. But Judy didn't play, and I think Judy's going to help Denver out a lot. And Washington going on the road for Sean Payton's first game at home. I think they played at home. Did they play at home last week? They lost at home, doesn't
they? Yeah, they lost at home.
So it'll be a second home game. But it'll be tough for Washington, but they'll play good defense. And I think it's going to be a close game. I think it's going to be like 20-17, one way or the other. I think it's going to be a coin flip. Whoever doesn't turn the ball over probably is going to win that game.
All right, thanks. Enjoy the golf this weekend, and enjoy the football on Sunday. I'll talk to you next week.
All right, thank you.
Jay Gruden, everybody, with me every Friday during football season. All right, up next, the smell test to finish off the show. We'll get to that right after these words from a few of our sponsors. The smell test brought to you by MyBookie. MyBookie right now has a no-strings-attached cash bonus that lets you deposit and withdraw quickly. Now, how does it work? Go to MyBookie.ag, use my promo code KevinDC, and on a deposit of $50 or more, you can receive up to $200 in cash instantly to your MyBookie account. Now, a lot of shops will make you bet that deposit amount 2 to 3 times before you're eligible to withdraw your cash winnings. Not at MyBookie. Bet your deposit amount 1 time and you're ready to withdraw at any time. Again, use my promo code KevinDC to claim your cash deposit bonus. Right now, Washington remains at MyBookie, a 3.5-point underdog. The total is 39, and Washington is plus 158 on the money line. So if you like them to win outright, $100 wins you $158 if they win outright. If you want to just bet with the spread, plus 3.5, it's minus 110, meaning you'll lose $110. It's one of the things I've emphasized about MyBookie. They've got fair pricing. Some of these places are going to charge you minus 120, minus 125 on a loss. That is not something you want to pay. MyBookie's got fair point spreads, fair money lines, fair totals, and fair pricing. Go to MyBookie.ag, use my promo code Kevin DC. By the way, the Terps line tonight up to 15 at my bookie. Maryland hosting Virginia tonight at CQ Stadium in College Park. The Terps are 2-0, trying to get to 3-0. They haven't been overly impressive at this point, beating Towson and Charlotte. They trailed Charlotte last week 14-0, but this is a game that many of us have marked on the calendar once we found out they were going to play UVA. It's been a long time since playing an ACC opponent in the regular season. Locks has done a really good job of trying to reestablish some of the games that were important to Maryland football fans. He's played West Virginia. That is a game that we'd love to see on an annual basis. And playing Virginia is a big deal as well. Now, Virginia is not very good, although they played a better game than some thought last week in a 36-35 loss to a very good James Madison team. But tonight in College Park, Maryland, a 15-point favorite at MyBookie. I like Maryland to really show up tonight and play a complete game. I would be surprised if this isn't a one-sided game against Virginia, and that would set Maryland up for the game next week at Michigan State. Michigan State gets Washington this week in East Lansing. And the Terps have a chance to get really to 5-0 before they play Ohio State in Columbus. Now, I know I've said this before in recent years. It's like, Sheehan, you get way too excited about Maryland's team too early in the season. And remember a couple of years ago in their Friday night game, they got absolutely waxed by Penn State. Then it happened against Iowa as well. Well, look, I've also said the last couple of years that these are going to be Mike Locksley's best teams. And they have, you know, had two excellent seasons. They've won two straight bowl games. And I think they've got a shot if they can beat Virginia and then go to Michigan State next week. Michigan State's not that great this year. And then they've got Indiana at home to get to 5-0 before a game in Columbus on October 7th. They would likely be ranked at that point. They've gotten votes now in both of the polls. Put three more wins together and do it impressively, and I think they would be sitting there, you know, somewhere between 20 and 25, headed to play Ohio State, where they've never played well in Columbus, but they have played well at home against Ohio State. But I'm looking forward to the game tonight. If you're not going to get to College Park, it is a nationally televised game on FS1, 7 o'clock kick in College Park. MyBookie.ag, again, use my promo code Kevin DC. So the smell test last week was really one of those painful weeks because it was a 4-5 week. It was a 4-5 week with 0-4 on Saturday with the college football plays. And then I went 4-1 on my NFL plays. The college plays were painful because, well, Nebraska didn't work, okay? Understood. And Illinois didn't work last Friday night. But Texas Tech catching 7 against Oregon, they were up, you know, by 2 scores at one point in the second half. And then down 31-30, they're driving for a game-winning field goal attempt, and they throw a pick 6 at midfield. So that game loses 38-30. And then Minnesota, I had laying 20.5. They had no business laying that number. And they're up 22-6 with a first and goal at the 1 yard line with still 3 minutes to go. So they're not going to take knees, and they couldn't punch it in, and they kicked a field goal. They went backwards, in fact. So 4-5 last weekend. Good NFL day. I got this from Jesse on Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter at Kevin Sheehan DC. Jesse, I saved this. Jesse tweeted me after my smell test last week, and he said, "Are you high playing the Cardinals and the Rams? You just said they might be the two worst teams in the league. You're wrong about both of those, and I really hate the Buccaneers pick, too." Well, thank you, Jesse, and I did. I 100% said, either on radio or on the podcast, when I gave out the Cardinals +7 and the Rams +5 last week, I said, you know, this is one where you've really got to bite your lip hard because these could be the two worst teams in the NFL. Now, the Rams had a healthy Matt Stafford out there, and I thought he looked really good against Seattle. It's week one, but, you know, that doesn't change the fact that he looked healthy and he had a lively arm. I gave out the Buccaneers as well. Two of those three teams, Jesse, won outright. And Arizona could have won outright. I'm glad they didn't. I'm glad they just covered and lost the game. By the way, my Circa picks last week, 4-1 in the NFL. And then my Circa Survivor pick was Denver. so I am out after 1 week. And I had a couple of people, friends of mine, say, why did you pick Denver? Like, that was a three-point line. And I told them, I said, you know, in these first few weeks, the obvious picks go down all the time. Every year in this survivor pool, you'll see, you know, the big favorites get picked by survivor players and they get beat outright in week one or week two. And it's like three quarters of the field is out. And last week, look, I told you, I bet Arizona, I bet the Rams, and I bet the Buccaneers. Those were three of the more played survivor picks last week, and two of those went down. Anybody that had Minnesota in week one and anybody that had Seattle in week one, they're out. And I thought Washington, you know, would win the game, but I wasn't 100% sure. That's why I bet Arizona plus the 7, and because it was a major contrarian play. And the other one was Baltimore. And I just wanted to steer clear from the obvious picks, knowing that one or two of them would go down, and I didn't know which ones would. And I did like Denver. I thought the Raiders were going to be in some trouble this year. And the Broncos actually almost made the smell test last week because there was a lot of action on the Raiders actually last week. So I took Denver, and I'm out after 1 week because of a missed field goal and a missed extra point in the game last week against the Raiders. All right, let's get to this week. So there were a lot of games that nearly made the cut. I think at one point I had 18 games written down. And so I narrowed that list down after getting a lot of information about where some sharp money was. And I want to start with just this idea going into it. It has nothing to do with me making these picks, but I did have a feeling that a couple of my picks would be in games where teams would be looking ahead to next week. Next week is an unbelievable college football weekend right now as it stands. Florida State, Clemson, Ohio State, Notre Dame, Utah, UCLA, Iowa, Penn State. There are just unbelievable. Colorado, Oregon, there are unbelievable games next weekend. It is the first major heavyweight matchup weekend of the college football season. And I think Scott said it the other day, but I think the same way. Like, some of these teams are going to be looking ahead. And I thought that some of the games that I would have this weekend would be teams that may be looking ahead. And so let's start with Florida State and Boston College. Florida State is going to Clemson next week in what will be a massive game for Florida State season. They hammered, you know, LSU in the opener. They beat somebody last week 66-13. I forget who it was. I'm pulling it up right now. I know it was, you know, one of those non-Power 5 schools. Southern Miss. They beat Southern Miss 66-13. They've got Clemson next week, and really that game, you know, they play Miami later in the year. They play Florida later in the year. They play Duke, actually, too. That might end up being a tough game. But this Clemson game on the road really is going to be the game that either very much puts them in the forefront of the playoff conversation or could take them out of it next weekend. They're playing BC this weekend. They're playing BC in Chestnut Hill. BC's 1-1. They barely beat Holy Cross last weekend, 31-28. And the week before that, they lost to Northern Illinois, 27-24. This game's got a high line. I mean, it's not, you know, a super high line because the public's all over Florida State laying 26 now. But the game opened at 28. There's a ton of sharp money on BC. First play this weekend, Boston College plus the 26 against Florida State, who may be in look-ahead mode. I'm not telling you that Florida State's going to lose the game, but I'm telling you that this might be a much tougher and a much tighter game than anticipated. The other one that is in the other team that I have in the smell test that is in look-ahead mode, Penn State. They play Iowa next weekend in their whiteout game next Saturday night. Iowa's undefeated. Penn State certainly expects to be undefeated. I love their quarterback, Aller. And I like Penn State's chances to be a Big Ten champion and be a playoff team, although I've never trusted James Franklin as a head coach. And I think they're going to be looking ahead to next week's whiteout game, which is quite the scene. I've been to two of them. Went and saw the whiteout game against Ohio State a few years back, the Dwayne Haskins game, incredible game. And I saw them play Michigan in a whiteout game as well. They're at Illinois tomorrow in an early start, just like Florida State, Boston College. Illinois is capable. I gave them out last week. It did not work. Plus the short number at Kansas on Friday night. I'll take Brett Bielema as my head coach over James Franklin personally. But Penn State's got more talent. But I do like what Brett Bielema's building at Illinois. I'm not so sure they're ready yet. But I think Penn State gets caught in a little bit of a look ahead. The public is all over Penn State laying 14.5. You might be able to even catch 15 in this game. And the sharp money is on Illinois. So I'll take Illinois plus the 14.5. Next up is K-State and Missouri. K-State's ranked 15th in the country. Don't forget that Kansas State was the Big 12 champion last year. They beat TCU in that championship game, even though TCU went on to the playoff. K-State's opened up with wins over Southeast Missouri and Troy. Impressive wins. They're at Missouri laying a perceived very short number. The number is 4. Missouri barely beat Middle Tennessee last week. That was the team Alabama crunched in the opener. Missouri is always kind of tough at home. The public loves Kansas State. This line at one point earlier this week was 5.5. There is sharp money moving that line down. Give me Missouri plus the 4. How about Tennessee and Florida? This is a game from the 90s that was just for about a 5 or 6 year period was the game of the year. Tennessee with Joe Milton at quarterback, 2-0, ranked 11th in the country. They crushed Virginia in the opener, and then they beat Austin Peay last week pretty easily. People think that Tennessee is back, and they were certainly back last year until the injury. Hendon Hooker, who I think is in Detroit. Obviously, he's not healthy enough after the injury late in the season last year against South Carolina. But Tennessee is the public darling in this game. That line's at 6.5 by the half point, and take the Gators in the Swamp plus the 7 on Saturday night. Those are the 4 college plays. Let's go to the NFL. You're going to laugh when I tell you that my first play is the team that I said last week was the worst team in the league, and I gave them out against Washington plus 7. And now they're home against the Giants getting only 4. I know the Giants lost 40-0, but the public believes the Giants will bounce back, crush the horrible Cardinals because they have to, because they play the 49ers the following Thursday night. So the Giants are staring 0-3 in the face if they don't beat Arizona. And that's why the public loves New York. That line's just sitting there at 4, begging people to take the Giants. I'm going to take Arizona for the second straight week. They were good to me last week. I've got the Cardinals plus the 4. Staying in that late afternoon window, you've got the Rams once again as an anti-public side against a heavy public side, and that would be the 49ers. The 49ers are laying 7.5. I'll take the Rams at home plus the 7.5. Sunday night, the Patriots are catching 3 against the high-octane Dolphins, who had Tua throw for 466 last week in their 36-34 win over the Chargers. The Patriots were impressive against Philadelphia. They're catching 3 in Foxborough Sunday night. I'll take the Patriots plus the 3. And then on Monday night, I'm going to give this one out now. I like the Panthers plus the 3. The public loves what they saw with the Saints, 16-15. Okay. The Panthers did not look great in their loss to Atlanta. This is a home game on Monday Night Football. Our first look at Bryce Young, Most people didn't watch the game last week. I like Carolina plus the 3. BC plus 26, Illinois plus 14.5, Missouri plus 4, Florida plus 7 on Saturday, the Cardinals plus 4, the Rams plus 7.5, the Patriots plus 3, and on Monday night, the Panthers plus the 3. There are your smell test picks for this week. I'll tell you, there were a lot of games. Like I gave out on the show yesterday, I think I mentioned, certainly I did on radio, I'm pretty sure I mentioned it on the podcast, that I leaned in the direction of Navy against Memphis. They covered easily. And then I liked the over in the Minnesota-Philadelphia game last night, and that game went way over. There are other games that were really close that I'm going to play personally, but they didn't necessarily fit completely the smell test criteria. I like Georgia Tech. They're getting 18 at Ole Miss a little bit as a lean. I like Purdue a little bit as a lean against Syracuse. Ohio getting 3 against Iowa State is a strong lean. And then on Sunday, the Titans were very close to making the smell test. I think I like them, and I think I like the Jags as well. The Falcons also could be a play. By the way, let me mention, Sunday before the 1 o'clock games, follow me on Twitter. Check out my Twitter at Kevin Sheehan DC. I may add a game to the smell test before the Sunday kickoffs because there is one game in particular that I'm just waiting for more information on. So I may add a game to the smell test Sunday via Twitter. All right, that is it for the day. Can't wait for Sunday to see what this team looks like in week 2. Be back on Monday to recap the whole thing.
So the Broncos show the whole playbook in the first quarter. Lead 10-0. And Washington now at the 20-yard line. Their first possession of the second period. And Williams going deep. Sanders beats Haynes. Sanders out in front. 80 yards. Touchdown.
Hello, sports fans. Whoa. Doug Williams right on stride with Sanders. And that is nothing more than bump and run coverage that time by Mark Haynes on Ricky Sanders, and he got smoked.